On and off the field, women in sports are inspiring and motivating others to be the best versions of themselves, rewriting the rules and changing the game. This is the On Her Turf podcast, hosted by Katherine Tappan.
Welcome to the On Her Turf podcast. I'm Katherine Tappan. Thank you so much for joining us this time. Today, we are chatting in studio with USA Hockey Hall of Famer and Olympic gold and silver medalist AJ Mollesko. AJ is now a color analyst for the NHL on NBC, as well as the New York Islanders broadcasts on MSG. AJ, fun to have you here.
So fun to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are here in New York City, which you live in Boston, just outside of Boston. So you're here in New York because you've been broadcasting a couple of the Islanders games this week. So how's that been going for you?
It's been great. Couple games into the season. I'm doing 20 total-ish, I mean, give or take, I guess. But had one last night, really exciting shootout win for the Islanders over the All-Star Penguins. So that was a fun game. I got to be right down in the action between the benches. So it was a fun one.
Yeah, so that's a different perspective than what NBC has you at when you're in the booth, you know, with Doc or whomever, Kenny Albert. So what is it like when you're standing there at ice level watching these NHL guys?
It is so fun, and it's so fast, and as an athlete, you get back into it. That's what I think is so fun, just the mentality of it, to see the body language and the way they talk to each other, the way the coaches communicate with them. And actually, the last NBC game, I was down, they put me down there in between the glass, too, which was a fun, so being the analyst down there was different, because on the Islanders broadcast, I'm sort of the third person, and I chime in every once in a while, a little sort of a cross between an analyst and a reporter, and then I do the intermission and pregame stuff. So it's really fun. It's just, you know, the refs are talking to you. At one point last night in the game, one of the players in the overtime was going to change. It's the long change in overtime, 3-on-3, jumps in the box with me.
Oh, geez.
He wants to get off, and I'm looking at the ref. This isn't supposed to be allowed, but come on in. It's not too roomy, but
yeah.
It was really funny.
It's such a different perspective. I mean, do you have to mute your microphone sometimes with some of the language? As we all know, hockey players have very colorful language.
I wonder that. I mean, I don't know how much it picks it up. I don't know. I don't know if I'd get in trouble for that if I'm not muting it.
But, there's only so much you can concentrate
exactly,
on at once.
Exactly. I'm really trying to watch the puck. I think I really don't want to eat a puck sandwich down there.
No, we don't want you to either. I mean, it's so cool. I mean, when you think about the broadcast in the New York Islanders, this really came about because NBC Sports initially made the move to make you the first woman to work as an in-booth analyst for an NHL postseason game on NBC Sports following your call in South Korea for the USA Women's Gold Medal match, which was outstanding. And the doors just really opened to you on that platform. We knew, all of us as your friends and hearing you for years on the air, knew you're capable of it. But when that opportunity first came your way, what was your initial reaction when you got that call?
It was in person. It was in Korea, actually. And I still remembered. It was such a brief encounter with Sam Flood. And it was so surreal in some ways because I'd always dreamed about doing something like that. But I honestly never really thought that it would be a possibility just because NBC is such an amazing amount of incredibly talented people that they put on air. So it has nothing to do with gender, male, female. Mm-hmm. It's just they have a lot of great analysts. So to me, I looked at maybe more college games because there's just not enough women's hockey on TV in order to really make a go at making broadcasting a career. So transitioning into other things, college, minors, things like that. And then NBC took a chance on me and I'm forever grateful. And they gave me a little bit of wiggle room, too. They had some patience with me because even though I was experienced in the booth on the women's game, it's a little different. My first game was Detroit at Boston, and I'm from Boston, as you mentioned. So being up there, knowing a lot of the people, knowing a lot of the press, everybody was wonderfully making a big deal of it, but it was very distracting.
I remember that day sending you a text message. I'm like, I don't want to distract you. I'm wishing you good luck tonight, but I'm sure you're like totally overwhelmed.
Well, and it was, you know, I mean, I know the game. I have confidence in my ability to call a game, but there's so much else that goes into it. And with an NHL and NBC broadcast versus an Olympic broadcast, there's more marketing, there's more promos, there's things like that, which just affects the cadence of a game. So it took some getting used to, and I really appreciate that NBC had that patience.
Was there anybody that you called for advice leading up to that game, that Detroit-Boston game?
You know, I've worked with so many amazing people, and I feel so lucky. You mentioned Doc and Kenny Albert. Sorry, I'm knocking things over.
It's
in the
all
studio.
Good. Whatever. Sheesh. It's a podcast. We have fun here.
Doc, as you mentioned, Kenny Albert. I've got a chance to work with Chris Cuthbert. He was my partner on that first game that I called for the NHL. They're just it goes on and on. So I talked to a lot of them mm-hmm. when I was still in Korea, met Chris there, knowing that we were going to work together in 2 weeks time at that point. And from an analyst perspective, you know, Brian Boucher was awesome. And we were partners on that first broadcast and then through the second round of the playoffs. And he couldn't have been better to work
with. That's awesome. Bouch is the best. But hearing that, I mean, that just puts him up on another level.
Yeah. And it's funny, because so many people were at, because it was, I was the first woman they put in the booth for the playoff. There was a lot of attention given to me. And mm-hmm. Bouch just didn't, you know, I mean, he gave me grief like hockey players do, but he never treated me any differently as Kenny, Chris, all those guys. It was just, I was a part of the team.
Yeah, you certainly were. And that translated on air. You know, you could sense it. I mean, hockey's such a great sport where everybody, you become a family instantly if you're part of, you know, the culture and you adapt in such a way. I mean, I felt that very early on in my career, and not having been, you know, you were a hockey player too. It's not, I mean, these guys know your credibility and they know that you've played this sport your whole life, so you should be in that position.
I'd be remiss to not mention Eddie Olczyk, because mm-hmm. I never worked with him because we are in the same role. But before that game, I did call him, and he spent some time talking to me about different things to watch for, questions that I could ask the players at morning skate, and he was great.
That's awesome. Which horses to bet on that next weekend?
Well, exactly. I got a little bit of that, too. Got a little bit.
So what was it like? You mentioned Doc Emrick. What is it like to work alongside a Hall of Famer and be a part of that?
My very first experience with broadcasting, my audition with NBC was with Doc, which was super intimidating.
And was that when we rode the train down together?
No, it was back in 2006.
Oh, okay. This was long before I came in.
Actually, it was 2005, because I had just retired from competitive play, and Molly Solomon, who was at NBC, called and asked me if I had any interest in broadcasting. And of course, I didn't. I mean, not that I didn't have any interest. I hadn't thought of it. It hadn't crossed my mind. But I said, sure, of course. So thought it would be a good experience. Took the train down to the old Stanford offices, a little different than they are now for the NBCSN, and show up. And there's Doc. And we're in this soundproof booth, much smaller than the booth we're in right now, calling a game from the Salt Lake Games, which I played in. Mm-hmm. And I assumed they would give me Canada, Sweden, or Finland or something. And they gave me the gold medal game.
Oh, wow.
Which we had lost in a just blazing fashion. Just, it wasn't a good game. It wasn't one I wanted to relive.
Oh, that's gut-wrenching. Why would they do that to you?
I don't know. It was
good
terrible.
Test, though.
But I will say Doc was incredible. I mean, the energy he brought in that tiny booth to a game, he already knew the outcome, how professional he was, how much he knew. And he didn't work those games because he had some personal issues. So Kenny stepped in for him. So he didn't have any memory of, he had to do all the work, and he did it. He's so incredible. But what I always tell people, and you know this too, he is a better person than he is a broadcaster, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, oh, 100%. He is one of the greatest human beings to ever walk this earth, and when you're around him and you see his work ethic and what he does, I mean, we were in Winnipeg last week, and we were at the pregame skate, and he's chatting with me, and he showed me the scorecard. He went back to, you know, 30 years ago when Edzo played, and he was calling the game for the New Jersey Devils, and Edzo was on the ice with Winnipeg playing against the Devils. I mean, and he had it. Well, it was easy to find, he says, because I'm very organized, and he has the actual written card from that game. And, you know, I'm sure there's 20 more years of all of that too. And
can you imagine getting your hands on that?
I know.
I mean, that's got to go in a museum.
Like Hall of Fame gold right here. But
absolutely,
that's really cool. I mean, he's one of the best. But so you've had some opportunities in your career and big doors open to you, and we'll get to the family stuff and everything as well. But what else do you feel like you need to learn? I'm curious.
There's always so much to learn, and I think every broadcast there's an ebb and flow to it, and there's good, you feel good, you don't feel good, no matter what. It's like being an athlete. You're in the zone. Sometimes things just click and everything's working and you're finding the words that you're trying to find as opposed to searching for them in your brain mm-hmm. or the rhythm with the partners that you're working for and working with. Working with Shannon Hogan now, who's awesome, and she's the host, studio host for the Islanders on the MSG broadcast, but she and I had never met before the first broadcast we did, and we hit it off right away and had a pretty good cadence and good chemistry, but it's always trying to figure that out. And, you know, we mentioned me being in the booth, being an analyst, that's an open mic, sort of a stream of consciousness mm-hmm. thought with your partner, whereas in the studio, it's much more, it's not scripted. I think that's the wrong word, but
it's
more
controlled.
Controlled, yeah. And you're asking for certain replays, and you're there's a direction you want to go. And so that's been a really good experience for me to have to think that way, as opposed to just, you know, when I'm in the booth for the Islanders, I don't have an open mic right now, and there's so many things I want to say. Luckily, Brendan Burke and Butch Goring are awesome, and they're pretty much everything I want to say, they're beating me to it. So it all works.
Well, I get asked the question a lot, what do you like better, field reporting or being in the studio? So I'm curious, you know, what do you like better? Have you decided which one you like better? Do you like that you get to do both?
I like that I get to do both. Right now, I like being in game analyst because I think that's where my comfort level is and that's where most of my experience is. And so I'm still feeling out the process of being in the studio and the asking questions, which now with NBC, when they put me down inside the glass, I've got to do the coach interviews all of that stuff, which is totally new to me. And I'm actually laughing when I come in here and I see you sitting over there with questions. I'm thinking way easier to answer questions than it is
totally
to ask
is.
Questions, I think. And maybe that's my background in sports, that people would ask us questions. When it comes time to turn the tables, I don't know how to be concise. I don't know how to ask the right way. No yes or no questions.
Right.
I have all these things in my head. But that's
a
work in progress.
It's harder for me to answer questions than it is to ask the questions. I find that when I do interviews, it's like, well, I feel like I'm rambling. I feel like I repeat myself, because I prefer to be the interviewer. You know, I prefer to ask the questions and to.
But the rambling is sort of what you want.
You want people to
go. You know, then you get all. Then that's where you get the good stuff.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, sometimes I can go off course though, and I don't want to go down that route.
I do think that's where I want to improve the most is my interviewing abilities and how to ask a question in a way that elicits the answer that they want to give.
Yep. It's one of the most difficult things to master. I mean, even all the years I've been doing this, I still don't have it. And I'm constantly, you mentioned Sam Flood earlier, of course, on this broadcast. He's the executive producer and president of production at NBC Sports. And he's constant. I can like hear him in my ear when I'm asking, Brian Kelly a question, when I'm asking a hockey player a question, because he's so good at reminding me, it's the who, it's the what, it's the don't ask a yes or no question. And sometimes you can get into a rhythm of asking yes and no questions because your analysts are so good and they're not going to give you a yes or no response. Jeremy Roenick is not going to say yes or no, even if I ask him that. So you can tend to fall into, poor tendencies that way and bad habits because you're used to great analysts around you. And in your case, you've got great athletes, they're pro guys, like they're used to being asked questions. So
and the coaches too, I think.
Yeah.
And there are of course exceptions to every rule and you have to be careful, or there might just be a day that they're having a bad day and they don't feel like talking, and if you give them that little window to just give you a short brief answer, they might take it.
I know, that's not fun.
No, it's not fun.
Well, you are not that kind of athlete. Let's talk about your athletics because we've talked about it a little bit already. You capture Olympic gold, an historic gold medal for Team USA in 1998 in Nagano. What was that moment like for you after years and years and years of playing this great sport? You finally get the ultimate prize. What was it like?
If I could figure out a way to answer that question, for somebody who gets paid to talk, I still haven't figured out how to answer that question. It was so amazing. It's been almost 21 years. We had a big reunion this summer with my teammates.
It was awesome.
It was amazing. And, we don't get together that often and we're spread out all over the country. But it's when we get together, we just pick up where we left off. And I think it was such a magical time because of the unknown. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. Not all of us were rookies in the whole tournament. Women's hockey hadn't even been in the Olympics yet. This was the first ever time that they introduced women's hockey. So we didn't know what to expect. Canada was the heavy favorites. We were the only people in the entire world, I think, that believed we were going to win. And so when we did, it was a huge upset, and it was a relief, and we were excited. But we didn't think it was as big an upset as much as it was on any given day, either of us could have won. Mm-hmm. And I tell people we played them 14 times leading up to that gold medal game.
So you knew them kind of well.
We knew them very well. And there was no one else at that point, there was really no one else to play that really challenged you, either team. And we pushed, those 14 games pushed the sport to new heights for sure. But we split 7-7 and we each scored 34 goals against the other.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it could not have been
statistically. There's no way to prognosticate this game.
Yeah, it was amazing. And so then we were all the way over in Japan. It was pre-social media, even very beginning stages of email. IBM had set up a surf shack for the athletes email home. And they set up email addresses for us. So I remember a day or two later when we sort of came up for air, I emailed a bunch of people that we won and they all wrote back, "We know. It's all over the papers," which we had no idea. We're like, "Wait, really? You knew?
You
followed? You watched?" So that was really fun for us.
Who was there with you at those Olympic games of your family members?
I had both my parents were there. My sister was actually working for CBS as a runner, and my little brother came, and my now husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, surprised me in the last couple weeks, and he called me actually a couple weeks before, and he said, "I wonder if there's any way to get, how would you get a ticket or something?" Asking me, I said, "There's no way. Absolutely not. Yeah. There's no way anybody could get a ticket. Who's coming?" And then when he told me it was him, I said, "Oh, well, I got to figure out a way to get you a ticket." So it was
pretty
fun.
Bold
it was
for a boyfriend to do. Very nice.
It was.
I love Jason, by the way. He's the best.
He is. And it was incredible. Now, going through what we now know was so historic, mm-hmm. it was amazing to have him there.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, he was there in South Korea with your whole family wearing the American flags this year, even though you were in the booth this time. What was the men's team like with you in 1998. What were they? I know we've chatted off camera about this, but you know, what can you tell me about the way you guys were received with all of these? You know, all the attention is on the men's USA hockey team at that time.
It was. Well, so I mentioned it was the first time women's hockey was introduced at the Olympics, and it was also the first time the NHL was involved. Mm-hmm. So they went from being an amateur games to suddenly sort of openly admitting that there are professionals that play in the Olympics, so we're going to allow our professional athletes to play and send the best. And ton of attention on Team USA, a ton of attention on Team Canada. And Team USA, if people remember, didn't perform as well as expected or anywhere near the medal round. So it was a huge disappointment to them. Huge disappointment to the fans. And it was a weird time because the athletes that weren't selected to compete got this huge break in the middle of the season. And a lot of them loved it. They went to Hawaii and golfed, or they were injured, they rehabbed. So there was this divide of it's a huge honor to be wearing Team USA or Team Canada jersey, but we also get a break. So there was a little bit of that. And then when they didn't perform as expected, there was a little bit of a backlash towards them. And then they, for people may remember, didn't behave all that well off the ice, and they flew home, and we were actually given a curfew that night because USA Hockey, as a big general
clamped down.
Well, and they were just basically saying USA Hockey athletes behaved badly, and so we were punished for that a little bit. But then it ended up not being that strict a curfew because we realized that, you know what, we just won. We're having the time of our lives. There's nothing that they can take away, and we're not behaving badly. We're just having a good time.
Yeah, good for you guys. I love that.
But it was to answer your question with the men, we didn't have a lot of interaction with them, and they sort of did their own thing. And then I remember after we won, Mike Richter and John Van Biesbroek and Pat LaFontaine were in the tunnel, and they had a team meeting, and they had left to come watch our team win, and they were down there, and that was, I mean, they were our heroes.
That's awesome.
I mean, those three are amazing, but all those guys were the players we grew up looking up to. There was no women's hockey. So to see those guys when you get off the ice, that they're high-fiving you and congratulating you was just, I mean, it gives me chills remembering
it. And now it's so different. Now you see the men's team sitting in the stands cheering on the women's team. We saw that so many years ago in Sochi, and then we saw it this year in South Korea as well. So how times have changed, that is for sure.
Well, and I think they've become more of a unified team, which I think is really, really cool. They all wear the same jerseys. Mm-hmm. They're all from the same federation, and there's serious pride in your country, which I think is wonderful.
So you get back to the Olympics 4 years later in Salt Lake City now, 2002, and you still take home a silver medal, which after you've captured gold, and any Olympian wants the gold medal. But what was the difference when you got silver with your teammates, and how was your response with that?
I'm still struggling with it, honestly, because it should be such a proud thing to have an Olympic medal or just compete in Olympics, just to wear your country's colors. But it was such a huge disappointment, and it felt and sometimes still feels like such a huge failure because our sights were so firmly set on the gold and we were now the favorite. So instead of playing 14 times, we played them 8 times leading up to Salt Lake, and we won all 8 of them.
Wow.
And it wasn't even close. We were so dominant over them. And the one game we lost all year was on February 22nd, 2002. And it was just sent our whole world into a tailspin. There are days and there are times, and I've spoken to groups, kids in schools and other people about how much you can learn from not achieving your goals. And a lot of times you can learn just as much. But I think it's the journey. Either way, it's trying to achieve success. And whether you actually achieve it or whether you fall short, that's where the learning is.
So you said you still haven't gotten over it. I mean, this is how many years later? My gosh. So,
almost 17.
Yeah,
but who's
not
counting?
That you're counting. Like, what are some of the things that you can do in the immediate aftermath of quote-unquote failure? And of course, none of us would categorize a silver medal as failure, but you as an Olympian, and every Olympian I've spoken to on this podcast that has fallen short of a gold medal has said the exact same thing that you have said. And I think any athlete that falls short of the finish line in first place or doesn't win the basketball championship they want to win, I mean, you can relate on so many levels, but what do you do to try and really right the ship again, to try and balance yourself again and remind yourself how great you are in the essence of failure?
I think that is the million-dollar question. And again, I talked before about the ebbs and flows in a broadcast, for example, or in the life of an athlete, and it's the same with any of that. How you mentally approach it, how you prepare for every given day in terms of the lessons that you learn, not the lessons that you learn, but how you absorb those lessons, right? Whether you want to learn them, whether you allow yourself to feel the disappointment, feel the pain, feel the sadness, and then move on. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a sport, right? I mean, and we are so lucky for so long. I was so lucky to play the sport that I love at such a high level and be able to compete, wear the red, white, and blue. Mm-hmm. And so keeping all of that in perspective certainly helped me. But it was interesting. After we won gold, we were asked to do so many cool things. And we were asked to be in, you know, our team was on the Wheaties box. I wasn't allowed to with the NCAA regulations, but went to throw the first pitch out with Joe DiMaggio at Yankee Stadium on opening day.
How cool
just
is
like
that?
Amazing things.
Yeah.
After Salt Lake, I was driving through my old hometown, New Canaan, Connecticut, and I said, if you want, I can come talk to my elementary school. And they said, well, I don't know if we have time. You know, and they weren't rude about it. It was just people want to hear from champions. They want to hear, how did you succeed? Not how did you try to succeed? And even if you didn't, what did you learn from it? So I thought that was really interesting learning curve for me.
It's kind of sad. My gosh, it's sad to think that would even exist. But looking at the team that just won gold, the USA women's team now that just won gold, I mean, they've been years and years and years the disappointing team, or the appearances haven't come their way. And then the second they win gold in South Korea, I mean, those girls weren't even off the plane in Los Angeles, and their schedules for the next 3 months was locked up with the Ellen DeGeneres show and the Knightley show.
Well deserved. And it was so amazing to watch those women. I loved every minute of it. You mentioned my family was there. Having my kids witness that in person was so emotional for me. And I didn't expect that, just because they know what I did, but I'm not sure that they really appreciated it until they saw what those amazing athletes.
They love your swag bag now, though.
They sure do.
They're like, oh, mom gets to broadcast the Olympics and she brings home all this cool stuff.
Well, and some of them got a little Catherine Tappan hand-me-downs.
Yes, I know. I love that. We get a lot of wonderful things broadcasting the Olympics. I'm happy to share the wealth. So, you mentioned NCAA and you weren't able to be on the cover of the Wheaties box because you went to this little school some of us have heard of called Harvard. 4 years of Harvard education. Your senior year, you won the national championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, when you win this national championship, are you thinking, like, what else more can I achieve? I mean, first of all, going to Harvard for 4 years and playing on the women's hockey team is an accomplishment where you got to at that point in your life. Then you win the national championship. You also took home the Patty Kazmaier Memorial Award given to the top women's college hockey player, which is outstanding. You know, did you think you were at the peak of your hockey career at that point?
Glory days. Take me back. No, I'm just kidding. In 98, we won the gold. 99 was an incredible year for my team at Harvard for taking, you know, when I started at Harvard, we weren't very strong. And through my time there, we just brought in a lot of good athletes and really built the program, and culminating with that win my senior year. But I joke around that was 99. And then in 2000, I got married and I said, oh man, I don't know. It's tough to compete with that, Jace.
Yeah.
But I had a good couple years there. And it is hard. But, you asked me before how I want to improve as a broadcaster. And I think as an athlete, there's always something to get better at. And at that point, actually, right after the national championship, I made the change from being a center to a defenseman on Team USA. And so that was a huge transition for me. Mm-hmm. And David Quinn, who hockey fans know is now the head coach of the New York Rangers, was our assistant coach at the time. And he was instrumental in helping me become a defenseman from my traditional center position.
Yeah.
So, there are things like, it was a huge difference. And, but I think that was not the reason that I kept playing there. Whether I stayed at center or not, there's always things that you can get better. You can get stronger. You can get faster. You can have a harder shot. You know, I watched the Penguins play last night. Sidney Crosby isn't sitting on his laurels. He's constantly trying to improve himself. So although that was a wonderful couple years of my life, there was always more to do.
Yeah, more to do, including having a family. This is the fun part of the conversation, too. You've talked about Jason, your husband, but you have 4 beautiful kids, athletic kids, smart kids, and now you're balancing this whole career. And tell me about family life and what it's like a day in the Malesko Griswold household, because when I see your Instagrams and I talk to you and I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know how she does it all, but you do.
It's chaos. That is the only word that really we could use to describe it, but it's lovable chaos. I can't even say it's controlled chaos because their control is going out the window. So yes, my children are 14, 2 girls that are 14 and 12, 2 boys that are 10 and 6, and all very active, play a lot of sports, live in a town with really great friends and activities. And, I've got a wonderful supportive husband. So to make this job work, and then I've got my brother-in-law who helps out with the kids. He's staying with them tonight. And again,
party.
I know exactly. Uncle Al's in charge.
Uncle
I don't
Al's
know what
charge.
They're going to do, but it's a challenge. And my travel schedule this year is certainly more harder than it is harder than it has been in the past. And some days my kids take it a little bit harder than others. I'm hopeful that at some point they will understand what I'm doing and that I'm passionate about it, that I love it, and that, I don't know, I guess that they'll forgive me for missing some things that I'm missing now.
And that sets the example for them as well. But, you know, we talked so many years ago. I remember when I was at NESN, New England Sports Network, as a regional broadcaster, and you were being tapped by them to maybe participate in doing some Hockey East games. And I remember at the time talking to you, and you were a little hesitant because the kids were much younger, and you knew how much time this job takes away from family. You're on the road, you're traveling. Even just one day in a studio could be a 15-hour shift. You're missing a lot of that. So why now did you decide that the MSG gig of 20 games and whatever's going to come your way with NBC Sports this year, the various opportunities there, you know, why is now the right time to do this and be on the road and kind of take advantage of this next dream of yours?
I'm not sure it is, but I also, with the opportunity that NBC gave me last spring, I felt like if I want to make a go at this, then they're giving me a huge opportunity and I've got to strike while the iron's hot. And so for me, I had such a great time over the last, I've worked the Torino Olympics in 2006, Vancouver in 2010, Sochi in 2014. Mm-hmm. I did the Rio Games for field hockey staying in Stanford, and then these most recent ones. And I loved working. I love the NBC Olympics experience on the broadcasting side. But it's hard to stay involved when you're not doing anything in between. Yeah. It's reps, it's timing, it's all of that stuff. So if I want to do this, then I'm given this opportunity and I want to take advantage of it. Is it the right time? I don't know. I mean, my oldest daughter just started high school this year and my little guy's in first grade. So to say they're all grown up is completely false.
Right.
But it's, you know, it is what it is. And I can talk to them all the time. And my oldest is funny. She likes it. She said, maybe this means you can get us tickets to games.
Nice.
So I'm good for something.
Yeah, you are. That's right. A lot of things. Well, you mentioned some of the support system. You've got, you know, Jason's brother. It's Jason's brother, right, Al? And then, you know, your family and friends that are around. But how do you achieve balance? Like, what do you do to really get yourself centered? And you, AJ, with all of this quote unquote chaos that you've described and this new big opportunity and new job, you know, what do you do to kind of bring yourself back down to earth?
That's a constant battle trying to figure that out, because when I get home, sometimes I'll have a couple days where I can totally check out and do what I need to do. And I love going to yoga classes. We have a 6-month-old puppy who I go for walks in the woods.
Oh my gosh.
And
it's like a fifth child. Yeah.
We have chickens and a bunny as well. But taking the dog for a walk in the woods, I think, centers me. Sometimes I'll listen to your podcast while I'm walking in the woods. And, you know, I think that it's things like that, or connecting, meeting up with friends of mine who also have dogs or whatever it may be. But trying to find that balance, I think, is hard, because sometimes I just want to sit at home with my kids, and that's fine too, and sit on the couch and watch a movie and sort of throw everything else out the window.
Yeah, and being with friends, I mean, I love, like, you and I, when we have our time together, it's like therapeutic to me. You know, we'll go out to dinner, we'll have a couple glasses of wine, and the next thing you know, the next day we're both texting each other like, I love you, this was so fun. And
I know.
Just the opportunity to really balance with somebody else too, and you have a lot of friends in your area as well. So.
Well, I think that support network for my kids in terms of getting them from point A to point B is critical, but you're absolutely right, just from an emotional, we're all going through different things. People mm-hmm. will say all the time, oh, you're so busy. Well, everybody's busy, and we're all busy with things we choose to be busy
right.
with. So I'm not going to complain about it. I've chosen this life. It's just trying to manage what I have to say no to. And I do have to say no to more things this year than I have in the past.
Do you ever feel guilty saying no to those things?
Yes, I do. And I made the mistake of agreeing to coach all four of my kids' hockey teams, and I'm not there enough. So I feel very guilty that I said yes and I'm not there. So that's how I justify saying no to some things, because I'd rather feel guilty about saying no than saying yes and overcommitting and not being able to be there.
Being present. Yeah, that's good. That's really good advice, because sometimes you can tend to say yes to a lot of things and then realize in the end you're more stressed about it and you're not giving them 100%, which is ultimately really not committing to the yes that you agreed to.
And then it stresses me out.
Yeah.
And then when I'm there, I try to do more. And yeah, it's again, a balancing act, as you said.
Yes. My goodness. Do you like to read at all? Do you?
I love to read. I don't have a chance to read right now, because I think anytime I get a chance, I'm reading, you know, stats or whatever. I don't know. I'm not a big stats person, but yes, game notes, or I'm watching games, but I love to read.
When you look at the big picture of this whole conversation and everything you've achieved in your athletic career, how has sports shaped your life?
Gosh, that's a great question. I don't know. I don't know what my life would be like if sports weren't involved, as an athlete, as a coach, as a parent of athlete, or now as a broadcaster. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think it's given my life structure. It allowed me to figure out how to fail and bounce back. It allowed me to take direction from a coach. It allowed me to figure out teamwork and gave me discipline. I mean, I remember you mentioned I was at Harvard. When the season was over, I found that my grades didn't necessarily slip, But things were so much harder to get done. Because if I had all afternoon to get my homework done, I wouldn't do it until 10 o'clock at night. Whereas if I had practice, I knew that I had this amount of time to get it done. And it just kept me on a very, tighter schedule. And I think that's been helpful as I move forward in life to just keep myself a little bit structured. I'm very disorganized, but it allows me to try to compartmentalize some of it.
I don't find you to be disorganized at all, but then again, I'm not looking at your wild and crazy notes in front of you, and I'm sure there's like a ginormous, you guys have like a dry erase board
in
your house?
Like, how do
you, this is crazy. Four kids in sports, the dog is, I mean, does the dog get, you don't forget to take him out ever, do you?
No, not yet. She will not be forgotten. She's the most spoiled of all of them.
I love it. What motivates and inspires you?
What motivates? I think that, I don't know, that's another hard question. You're good at this question. See, now I don't like answering questions if they're hard questions.
You're good. You can think about it.
Yeah, I might have to think about that. I don't know. I think that right now what motivates me is the example I'm setting for my kids. I don't know. I can't say that obviously earlier in my life, but knowing that my kids have the world in front of them and that Jason and I are here to set an example for them, I want to do the best I can.
Very good answer. See, you didn't think about it. You're too good at this. All right, let's do a little fun. We tend to like ask a couple really fun off-the-cuff questions. So first off, what is your guilty pleasure?
I heard you ask these, and I was thinking to myself, I didn't prepare.
Don't worry.
Okay, guilty pleasure. I sort of said it before. I think it's when I just shut everything out and put a movie on with the kids and sit on the couch and that's it. Just check out.
Yeah. And what kind of movies do you guys watch? I mean, that's a large range of age for the kids.
It is a large range. So it depends. If it's later, the boys have gone to bed, we'll watch, different things. My oldest daughter just watched Love Actually the other night.
She's great movie.
She's a big time Christmas fan. So she was ready. It was actually on Halloween night. She didn't want to trick or treat. She wanted to ring in the Christmas season. We'll watch family movies that are, like the whole Pixar, all that stuff. Because some of that stuff is hilarious for adults.
Yeah.
I mean, half the jokes go over the kids' heads.
They've done a great job with that. I love that. Very cool. What's one item besides your cell phone that you cannot leave home without?
Sometimes I forget my cell phone and my wallet, but
you're so organized. I forgot.
I would say snacks.
Yeah,
I need to eat, and I'm trying. I try to keep healthy snacks, but Jason gives me a hard time that if we ever argue about anything, he said, have you eaten? He thinks I have a blood sugar issue that I get really crabby. I get hangry.
Yes, I think I do too. That's funny. Well, actually, it's interesting. That leads me in another direction with the travel and everything now that you're doing. I mean, do you still work out a lot? I know, or did sports kind of burn you out at some point? Now you're just so active doing everything else. And like, what do you like to do?
I am active doing things, but I do find that I'm a much happier person when I get real workouts in. Mm-hmm. And working for MSG is hard just because of where the team skates and where they play their games. So it takes a lot of time out of the day to go to the morning skate in Long Island, come back to Manhattan, go to Brooklyn. But, for workouts, I've gotten nursing a couple injuries, which is such a bummer. I never had any major injuries when I played.
Why now?
I don't know. I'm getting old.
No,
it
you're
stinks.
Not.
But I love to, I mentioned yoga, but I love going for walks with people. I used to love running. Right now I'm nursing a knee situation. Being active, I think, just makes me a happier person. I sleep better.
Yeah.
So as much as I can get out there and I like spinning classes. You're going to take me to your boxing class sometime.
I am. We have to get that on the calendar. I'm like dying to get you there. I was actually thinking of you the other day when I was at class. I'm like, oh, AJ's here this week. I need to bring her boxing.
We got to try it.
Yeah. It's going to be so much fun. You're going to get hooked. I can't wait. That's funny. Running, yeah, that's a whole other story.
I know. Funny. I'm not running. Built like a runner. Hockey players don't make good runners.
No,
I'm just going to throw it out there.
But you're also on the ice with the kids a lot, coaching hockey and everything else you're doing. So you are still playing hockey. What is the top item on your bucket list right now?
My instinct is to say travel, but you and I both have been so fortunate traveling to amazing places. But I would like to go somewhere where I'm going on vacation.
Just say, it's also work.
Yeah.
You're not going to South Korea to hang out in South Korea for 2 weeks.
Which it was beautiful, and I did.
Right, but we're there to work.
Exactly.
So you don't get to see much.
Explore.
Is there any place in particular you'd really like to see?
I'd love to go to Australia or New Zealand, that whole area, which I know is sort of cliche, but it just would be amazing.
There's a reason it's cliche. And when you go, let me know.
Okay.
I would love to go. That and an African safari, I'd love to go on.
I'd love that.
I feel like your family would be really fun to go on an African safari with.
My in-laws did an African safari when my husband was in college, and he keeps saying that we got to go back and do that. That would be a good one.
Can I come with the Griswolds when you guys
go? Absolutely. Anytime.
What kind of music do you like to listen to?
I like a pretty good variety. I generally like country. Not real, you know, like Zac Brown Band country, which some people think is...
He's like a hybrid.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love Zac Brown, too.
Yeah, and I tend to get stuck in whatever songs I have. So then when I hear new songs, I always... I like that. Like if I'm my brother-in-law, who we mentioned Uncle Al, he's always got some different one or two songs. I'm like, oh, that's sort of a good one, too. So I don't know. I'm open to different types of music. Right, I'm not really like into rap or heavy metal or any of that.
That's where we divide.
Yeah, okay.
We're pretty similar in a lot of things. Yeah, I'm a big rap hip-hop fan. You'd never know it. 90s hip-hop is my jam. It's kind of weird. But anyway, I look like a 90s hip-hop, don't I?
Do you have the dance moves, too?
I think I do.
I'm sure you do.
I mean, I like to think I do, but I'm sure others around me don't think they're quite as the way they should be, but I own it.
I really want to tell everybody that you're doing moves right now, but that would be lying. But it's good to imagine.
We should get the hip hop song. Yeah. Next podcast with you, we're going to get some wine. We're going to do the 90s hip hop. We got to get Uncle Alan here.
We've
mentioned him like 100 times.
I know, seriously.
And
he's
a Boston sports fan, is he? Because then
they're from Baltimore, but I think we're making him one. We're getting there. Yeah, he's a big Ravens fan, though. It's unfortunate.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, AJ, it's been fun. I know we could talk for hours and hours, but I gave you a window of time, so I don't want to abuse that privilege. But it's been fun. I have to tell anybody listening that when I asked you to be on this podcast, one of the things you said to me, and I've told a couple of our colleagues at NBC this, you were like, you texted me, you agreed to it, and then you texted me days later and like, you know, just because I'm your friend, like, I don't want you to think that you need to have me on. I'm like, first of all, yes, you're one of my dear friends. But second of all, I mean, your credentials are beyond what the On Her Turf podcast would ever, ever want. And so we're so honored to have you here as an Olympian, as a mom, as a broadcaster, as a Harvard alum, as an amazing person. So,
well, thank you, Catherine.
We're super excited.
But your lineup is unbelievable.
The people you're getting is really, really cool.
I'm
glad you're listening. Yeah. I have to remember that, though, that some people are actually listening that are going to be on the podcast. I need to, like, revisit these fun little tap dancing questions off the cuff, guilty pleasures.
Well, I wish I had a better answer, but
no, you were great.
Well, you've had great, and you know, as far as learning from people, you have been a great mentor to me too. You are unbelievable at your job, and you've been very helpful, very supportive, and I love that there are some awesome women in the biz.
Agreed. Awesome. Well, thanks for having us, AJ. We'll have to do it again.
Happy to be here anytime.
Thank you to AJ Malesko, USA Hockey Hall of Famer and Olympic gold and silver medalist. You can download the On Her Turf podcast on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. Let us know what you think. We want to hear from you, so be sure to chime in. Also, you can follow us on Instagram @OnHerTurf. Have a great rest of your day, and be sure to join us next time for the On Her Turf podcast.